going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first. And on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70. The number to call in during this live broadcast is 1-800-858-6582. If you have unlimited long distance or are calling from a cell phone, please use our toll number, 1-559-733-5161. That's 1-559-733-5161. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Darren Weeks here, sitting in for Chris Gerner. Welcome to another edition of American Exposé on this June 7th, 2004 edition of our broadcast tonight. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. Chris, I talked to him earlier tonight, and he expects to be back with you again live tomorrow, as long as the weather holds up. He's had some storms go through and kind of wreak havoc with things, and rather than take a chance at having lightning or something ruin his equipment, he likes to shut it down, and certainly we can't blame him for that, as equipment is not cheap. And again, he should be back with you again tomorrow. I'm pleased to be able to have the opportunity to be with you tonight, and I have some information I want to share with you, and of course your participation here in the broadcast is also welcome and appreciated. The number is 1-800-858-6582, 1-800-858-6582, and I guess I should also tell you to check out the website, AmericanExpose.com. American is spelled with a K and not a C. Again, AmericanExpose.com. A lot of research, a lot of time, a lot of effort has been put into that site before I ever touched it, and we hope to have a lot more on the way, and as time progresses. So again, we encourage you to check that out. An excellent research site, something that you can certainly find out and benefit from. There's a lot of important links there. One link that is there that you should check out is weather modification. We have drought-like conditions. I was just talking to Chris about this earlier before I went on the broadcast a couple of hours ago, about how the West is experiencing drought-like conditions. They were forecasting drought-like conditions before the summer ever started. I think even before spring ever started, they were talking about having a drought out there. And meanwhile, here in southern Michigan, we have just been bombarded with rain. It's been absolutely incredible how much rain we've gotten. The first storm came through and there were tornadoes and tore up the whole city. The local paper here said that we had 8/10 of an inch of rain in a period of 10 minutes. It's just unbelievable. And the farmers' fields have been flooded. So the farmers are unable to plant. And by the way, that was mentioned, if those of you who may have checked this out, the New Order of the Barbarians, Dr. Richard Day, was an insider into this plan for world domination, the New World Order that George Herbert Walker Bush referred to it as. In the New Order of the Barbarians, that was something Dr. Richard Day was talking about, weather modification being a reality. He said we either can control the weather or we're very close to being able to do so. And if I remember correctly, I think this was back in the 1960s that he gave this speech before the group of pediatric physicians. And he talked about weather modification being a reality. And yet we have things happening in the weather today that we haven't seen ever. And we have we have certain groups passing out literature. I got something in my hand here that I came across. See, I work in the media, folks. In case you don't know, I'm one of the few people in the media that actually know what's going on. Unfortunately, I don't make decisions about what you're going to see on TV. I don't think I'd have a job for very long if I did. But I do have a job in the media. I work behind the scenes, and I wake up whatever people that I can. I try to spread the word about what's really going on. I try to be an evangelist for the truth on the inside, And but I was at work one day, and some people, there was this leaflet here from a group called MoveOn.org. They date, I think, back to the Clinton presidency, the idea being that the Clinton scandals were going on, and they were saying, let's just move on. In other words, let's just forget about all the atrocities that Bill Clinton did against our nation, and let's just move on to something else. And forget about it. But now they've continued to operate within the realm of politics. And you may remember, you folks out there who are in tune to the to what's going on in the media and the movie world in Hollywood, they put out this this movie recently called The Day After Tomorrow. And this is a Hollywood propaganda film about the environment. And this leaflet hopes to capitalize on this. They say in this leaflet, global warming isn't just a movie, it's your future. And it has a picture of a woman and a tornado in the background, and it says, problem number one, reality. The Earth's atmosphere is heating up at a rate faster than any time in history, a phenomenon known as global warming. Glaciers at the North Pole are melting. Sea levels are rising. Storms are intensifying. Heat waves, like the one that swept through Europe last summer, are longer and more deadly. Right now, we are in the middle of an unfolding climate crisis. The abrupt climate crisis in The Day After Tomorrow, that is the movie, is over the top. A full-blown ice age could not happen, but global warming could bring dangerously cold temperatures in some areas, while others suffer severe storms, extreme heat, floods, droughts, and water shortages. Here in the U.S., cars, trucks, and coal-fired power plants spew over half of all pollution that causes global warming. But that's not inevitable. Together we can turn it around. And they continue on here, blaming George W. Bush. They say, problem number two, one man stands in the way of real progress towards stopping global warming, President George W. Bush. And of course, you know, the intent of this, of course, is like they mentioned in the Banker's Manifesto in 1892, going back against the Republicans and versus the Democrats, pitting both groups against each other, and everybody's arguing about stuff that doesn't really matter. Not that our environment does not matter. I'm not making that statement at all. However, George W. Bush being weak on the environment, folks, the fact of the matter is, what this leaflet, if they were really dedicated to the truth, they would be telling the truth about weather modification. That's the issue. George W. Bush is a bad guy. He is a bad guy. But weather modification is going on, and John Kerry isn't going to be the answer either. You have good cop, bad cop, and this keeps people sucked in to the argument, and nothing really gets done. And that's the point here, folks. You got Rush Limbaugh, you got Jim Quinn out of Pittsburgh, who they just perpetrate these lies back and forth and keep Americans in the dark. Jim Quinn is a guy who was very good at exposing the atrocities of Bill Clinton. He was very good the whole time during the Clinton administration, talking about how bad Clinton was and how he was in bed with the communists. But yet, he's done nothing but embrace George W. Bush. He's been the biggest apologist for George W. Bush on the face of the earth. And we know that George W. Bush and the Bush administration, I mean, where is the exposure to the realities of September 11th? The fact that the Bin Laden family and the Bush family are in bed together through a joint venture called the Carlyle Group. Both of these people are, both of these families are capitalizing, are making money off of the war on terror. And yet you have people who are supposed to be people who are on the air, who are giving real information, and they're defending one side or the other. And MoveOn.org, they're on the Democrat side. But then you got the Rush Limbaughs and the Jim Quinns and the Sean Hannitys and all these people on the Republican side. And yet the truth doesn't really matter. The truth doesn't really matter at all. It's been a real busy week. This past week has been seems like a lot of things have gone on in the news. We've we've had the death of Ronald Reagan, the 40th president of the United States. Not a big surprise. We saw that one coming for a long time. I talked about the phonies, you know, these phony broadcasters, these people who take a side, and I mean they're talking what a great guy Ronald Reagan was. This love fest that the entire media is having with Ronald Reagan is well, I don't know. I think it's just kind of sad for the country because. I don't know. My thing with Ronald Reagan, he wouldn't be there, folks, if he wasn't doing something that the elite wanted him to be doing. And that's the bottom line. The whole issue of unification of Germany, the whole issue of the Berlin Wall coming down, there's a lot of unification going on. They're calling it the global government. Or maybe I should say global governance. All of this stuff had to happen in order for the New World Order to be implemented. And the thing I see with Ronald Reagan is this is where the lie, his administration is where the lie began that communism was dead. This was the administration that lured the American people to sleep to the threat of communism. That's where it all began. The courting of Mikhail Gorbachev, an unrepentant, unapologetic, blatant, socialist, blatant communist, and yet we're following the Soviet Union's quote dissolving. I remember Time magazine naming him Man of the Decade, Mikhail Gorbachev. This lie that communism is dead, it began with the Reagan administration. And who was Ronald Reagan? Well, he was certainly, I agree with the media on one thing, he was a very good communicator. He was very good at what he did. But, folks, you got to keep telling yourself, knowing who controls the government, knowing that our government is controlled, it's been hijacked by the international bankers. This banking cartel, they control everything. They control the economy. Just by virtue of the fact that they control the money. They regulate the value of the money. They control inflation. They can make or break a presidency. And Ronald Reagan was there, apparently, with their blessing. And now you can see with the so-called conversion of the Soviet Union to a democracy. And what is a democracy, folks? A democracy is the road to communism. It's not our representative form of government, our constitutional form of government, even though that's what they want you to believe. They can't say they're going around the world promoting communism. The American people would never go for that. Even in the dumbed-down state that the American people are in, they still know that communism is bad. So they have to change the name. This is psychological operations that the ruling elite engage in, and that's what they're doing. They're calling it democracy because they know that you're not going to know what democracy really is, and they're going to, you know, if you call our system of government democracy long enough, then people believe that democracy and constitutional government go hand in hand, that the two are not mutually exclusive, that the two are actually the same thing. But the reality is now we're starting to see, since we've been a democracy, so-called, since they're trying to convert this government into a democracy, we're seeing more and more all the stuff that's going on. There's an article that I came across, what was it, last week sometime, I guess, where now we're seeing police in certain places dress up in camouflage as they're trying to nail speeders. You know, and I feel like this is an effort to try to condition the American public to accept the idea of seeing a militarized police force. But pondering Reagan, pondering a lot of the stuff that's been going on, we're told that Russia now is supposed to be like as free as the United States is. We have an article here from Richard Pipes from the May-June 2004 edition of Foreign Affairs. He writes, Flight from Freedom, What Russians Think and Want. He talks about the Soviet Union in here. And, well, you tell me how free the Soviet Union is. It says, when the Soviet Union dissolved in 1991, expectations were high that Russia, rid of communism, would take a firm pro-Western course, democratizing its political system, granting its systems its citizens unassailable civil rights, and rejoining the international community. Such were the promises made by President Boris Yeltsin when he took charge. But after more than a decade, these expectations have not been realized. Since ex-KGB Colonel Vladimir Putin took over as president in 2000, Russia's democratic institutions have been muzzled, its civil rights restricted, and its cooperation with the international community far from assured. What accounts for these unwelcome trends? Polling data from a variety of sources suggests that the answer is more complex than meets the eye. Although actions undertaken by Putin and his associates play a large part, there's a good deal of evidence that the anti-democratic, anti-libertarian actions of the current administration are not being inflicted on the Russian people, but are actually supported by them. This evidence also indicates that no more than one Russian in ten cares about democratic liberties and civil rights. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. They're making the case that the Russian people don't want freedom. Well, I would suggest to you that perhaps the Russian people have never really known what freedom really is. And you got to keep in mind, folks, too, how many people here in America want freedom? I mean, it's frustrating, but socialism is something that tends to, it's so much easier sometimes letting the government take care of you. How many times in America, freedom, true freedom, folks, requires that you are mature enough and responsible enough to take care of yourself. Freedom is something that you can't have it both ways. You either have to choose between freedom or having somebody take care of you. And if you have somebody take care of you, and you can depend on them, supposedly, but you're going to have them in your life. You're going to have the control structure there. And you're not going to have freedom. And here we are. That's the point, I think, that we are at here in the United States today, is you have too many people who are willing to let the government take care of them. And you can't have freedom when you do that, folks. And I don't know if that's the case that's going on in Russia right now. But Richard Pipes continues. He says, before examining what Russians say and think today, it is necessary to look back at Russia's past. Despite its reputation for unpredictability, Russia is remarkably a conservative nation whose mentality and behavior change slowly, if at all, over time, regardless of the regime in power. As recently as 75 years ago, 80% of Russia's population engaged in agriculture and lived in scattered, largely self-sufficient villages. The country had only two major cities, Moscow and St. Petersburg, themselves made up of sizable migrant peasant populations. In a predominantly rural society, the kind of social cohesion that Westerners took for granted in their own countries was very weakly developed. Russia was not so much a society as an agglomeration of tens of thousands of separate rural settlements. National feelings, therefore, were also poorly developed, except at times of foreign invasions. Until recently, Russian peasants were more likely to identify themselves as Orthodox Christians than as Russians. The pre-1917 Tsarist government, which punished any attempt by its subjects to interfere with politics, was a remote force. It collected taxes and drafted soldiers, but gave its citizens virtually nothing in return. Until 1861, the vast majority of Russia's population were serfs beholden to the state or to the private landlords. As such, peasants could legally be beaten by their masters, be exiled, and be inducted into the army, but they were forbidden to protest to the authorities about mistreatment. Human rights was an alien notion to them. Private property and public justice were similarly underdeveloped, arriving in the country relatively late and in imperfect form. Whereas in England, land was treated as a commodity in the 13th century, and in Tsarist Russia, all land belonged to the crown. until the mid-18th century when ownership was granted to the nobility. The great majority of peasants lived in communes, which held title to village land and redistributed it periodically to households to account for changes in family size. Only a small minority owned their land outright. An effective Russian judiciary did not emerge until 1864. Even then, the broad range of activities classified as political crimes were dealt with by arbitrary administrative procedures rather than by the courts. These factors, the absence of social and national cohesion, the ignorance of civil rights, the lack of any real notion of private property, and an ineffective judiciary prompted Russians to desire strong czarist rule. With few lateral social ties, they relied on the state to protect them from each other. They wanted their rulers to be both strong and harsh, qualities designated by the word grozny, meaning awesome. The epithet applied to Tsar Ivan IV. Experience has taught Russians to associate weak government, and democracy is seen as weak, with anarchy and lawlessness. Such is Russia's cultural inheritance, the net effect of which is to make Russians, even in modern times, the least socialized or politicized people on the European continent. Twice in one century, 1917 and 1991, their governments collapsed almost overnight, with people seemingly indifferent to their fate. In both cases, governments forfeited their rights to cease in the eyes of Russians because they had ceased to be awesome. In other words, they had become weak. Now they say rejecting rights. The current mood of the Russian population can be determined from opinion surveys. The leading polling organization is the All-Russian Center for the Study of Public Opinion, which is based in Moscow and directed by Yuri Levada. Its in-depth analysis of attitudes on a variety of subjects provide invaluable insight into the Russian mind. Polling is also conducted by the Institute of Complex Social Studies of the Russian Academy of Sciences and Validata, a center for market and opinion research headed by Maria Volkestein. Results of these surveys frequently appear in the Russian daily newspaper Izvestia. These sources suggest that modern Russians, like their ancestors, feel estranged from both the state and society at large. Their allegiance is to family and friends, those they address familiarly as TY, as opposed to the former VY, and they feel little affinity with any larger community. Trust of outsiders, the basis of civilization in the West, is still largely absent in the country. Russians openly identify with a small fatherland. When asked, what do you connect most directly with the idea of our nation? In a 1999 poll, 35% replied, where I was born and grew up, whereas only 19% opted for the state in which I live. Russians are far more asocial and apolitical to their Western counterparts, tending to withdraw into private worlds where they feel in control. They are said to live in trenches, surrounded by enemies. Well, isn't that the way it is in communist countries? Everyone's an enemy. I mean, you can't even trust your children sometimes. They might turn you into authorities. Comparing citizens' attitudes towards their government in Russia, the United States, the United Kingdom, Germany, and Sweden, Validata surveys concluded that Americans and Swedes display the highest trust in the state, whereas Russians don't trust the state at all. Yeah, see, this is a problem, folks. We Americans are way too trusting, just like, again, I refer to Dr. Richard Day in The New Order of the Barbarians. Americans don't ask the right questions. Folks, I strongly recommend you check that document out, too, if you haven't. I believe it's in the Shadow Government section of the SweetLiberty.org website. SweetLiberty.org. Go in and on the main page under Issues, there's a pull-down menu where you can select Shadow Government. Go in there and it's called The New Order of the Barbarians. There's a lot of information in there which follows the pattern, much of it, to the extent of what's... I mean, they talk about the fashion. They talk about how music is going to get worse. I mean, some of the music today is so bad, I could hardly stand to listen to it. And yet people have that stuff blaring everywhere because they don't even realize how awful it is. I guess you can get used to any kind of noise. At any rate, democracy is widely viewed as a fraud. Well, folks, I would suggest that democracy is a fraud. There is prevalent perception that Russia's politics have been privatized and are controlled by powerful clans. 78% of respondents in a 2003 survey said that democracy is a facade for a government controlled by rich and powerful cliques. Only 22% expressed a preference for democracy, whereas 53% positively disliked it. Asked in another poll whether multi-party elections do more harm than good, 52% of respondents answered more harm, and a mere 15% said more good. Political parties are also unpopular, and most Russians are quite amenable to living in a one-party state. According to a recent survey by the Center of Sociological Studies of the University of Moscow, 82% of Russians feel they have no influence over the national government. 78% say they even have no influence over local government. Enhancing personal freedoms and improving civil rights do not attract much support. Well, again, I say, have they ever really tried to do real freedom? Because instituting a democracy is not constitutional, like the American constitutional form of government. So, I would say that the Russian people are right in their skepticism, if you can believe these polls. When asked to choose between freedom and order, 88% of the respondents in Voronezh province expressed preference for order, seemingly unaware that the two outcomes are not mutually exclusive, and that in Western democracies, again, we don't have a democracy, we have a representative republic, folks. Let's not get bogged down, let's not forget that. In Western democracies, they reinforce each other. Only 11% said they would be unwilling to surrender their freedoms of speech, press, or movement in exchange for stability. 29%, meanwhile, were quite prepared to give up their freedom for nothing in return because they attached no value to them. A survey conducted in the winter of 2003 by Romir Monitoring, a sociological research institute, found that 76% of Russians favor restoring censorship over the mass media. Such opinions led Alexander Yakovlev, pardon me while I flip the page here, a perestroika, to bemoan his compatriots' penchant for authoritarian rule. In an interview with the Financial Times, he observed that none of the winning parties in the December 2003 election, Duma elections, had even once mentioned the word freedom. All the slogans were about banning, locking up, and punishing. The judicial system is held in contempt as both corrupt and subservient to the state. Now, I don't want to read this entire thing. Let me skip to the last line, this last paragraph here. In aggregate, the conclusions from surveys of Russians' opinion are far from encouraging. Western commentators watch with dismay as Putin slowly and deliberately transforms Russia into a one-party state, but they fail to recognize, even more ominously, that Russians, by sizable majorities, actually approve of his actions. Putin's victory in the 2004 presidential elections is certainly due in part to his stifling of the opposition, but he's popular precisely because he has reinstated Russia's traditional model of government, an autocratic state in which citizens are relieved of responsibility for politics and in which imaginary foreign enemies are invoked to forge an artificial unity. The only desire that Putin has not yet satisfied is restoring Russia's status as a great military power. But if his response to other public demands after the model, then this wish too is likely to be provided in good time.
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
What do caves and concrete bridges have in common? It's coming up next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Have you ever been in a cave? If you have, perhaps someone has told you that the rock formations hanging down from the ceiling, called stalactites, are thousands or even tens of thousands of years old. Scientists tell us that stalactites take 100 years on average to grow just 1 inch. But how accurate is this figure? Stalactites grow when water seeps through limestone rock, dissolving the limestone in the process. When this water-containing dissolved limestone emerges from the roof of the cave, it hangs for a moment and, in a current of air, some of this water evaporates, causing the limestone to deposit. Finally, the remaining water drops to the floor of the cave and continues to evaporate and deposit. In Worcester, Ohio, there is a concrete railroad bridge which had one stalactite growing under it that was over 12 inches long. Had the railroad bridge been standing for more than 1,200 years? Obviously not. In fact, the bridge had been cleaned of stalactites only 12 years before. Nor is this situation unusual. More than 300 stalactites were counted growing under bridges in just this one city, and stalactites are not hard to find under concrete bridges in most cities. So we take so many things which evolutionists tell us about the world at face value, even if they contradict the Bible. And before we start taking men's word on faith, we should take what the Creator says in the Bible at face value. He knows much more than all men put together and is to be trusted above all men.
For a free copy of our Creation Resource Catalog, call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
This program on FirstAmendmentRadio.com is much more than entertainment. It is more like an information-packed audio magazine delivered direct to you. Like any magazine, if you don't want to keep getting it, simply unsubscribe by not listening. But you are listening, so now go to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there to make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program. Not only should you subscribe for yourself, but you should give extra to help us spread the message of FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Don't do Internet? You can also write us. First Amendment Radio, 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, 93274. 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, T-U-L-A-R-E, California, 93274. Thank you.
Welcome back to American Exposé, ladies and gentlemen. Darren Weeks here, sitting in for Chris Gerner. On this June 7th, 2004 edition of the broadcast, go to the website, AmericanExposé.com. That's www.AmericanExposé.com, spelled with a K, not a C, to do your research on Agenda 21 and the UN system operating in America. This is the effort by the globalists to implement a worldwide system of government that is communistic in nature, and it's devoid of happiness. It's devoid of individual liberties, which lead to happiness. It's devoid of your ability to own private property. The conversion is going on, turning all private property into public property, and we're hearing a lot about land use and land management. And folks, you know, the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto is being implemented here in this country right now. We say it often, but it's true. We have to say it because it's true, and nobody else is saying it. You're not going to hear about how communist our government has become from the controlled media, because they are controlled. Americans trust their government because for so long we've been spoiled. We've had a lot of things, and that's... That, by the way, is the view of the globalists themselves. They talk about spoiled brat Americans, that we've had it too good. And unfortunately, in many respects, we've had it too good. They're right when they say that, because we don't view things from a critical eye. Those who understand history, those who understand what's going on in the world, they are able to see... You have a better view of what's going on today when you know what's happened in the past. And that's why they've dumbed down our school system. That's why things are not, they don't teach real history in school anymore. They teach diversity. They teach respect for various cultures. They teach, back in the 80s, we were dealing with something here in Michigan, a pilot program called the Michigan Model for comprehensive school health education. And you know, I to be perfectly honest with you, I don't even know if they're still using this in the schools. I probably should try to find out. But I mean, it was a health curriculum that was comprehensive. There was they had everything from sex education, which, by the way, the entire sex education part of the Michigan model was written by Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider. So talk about having the chicken hawk guard the chickens. But this was something that, I mean, there was a section in there. See, they had a problem with keeping the children calm, so they had calm breathing in there, which resembled the quieting response. It was taken from a book where they're hypnotizing people into being calm. And so basically the teacher was placed in a situation in the classroom where they're hypnotizing children to be calm. And this is all right here in the Michigan model that we were fighting back in the 1980s. And folks, they spend all this time on all this stuff, this diversification, school to work, workforce development. They got all the fancy names, and people see this stuff. They say, well, you know, I mean, I think it's good that they're teaching careers in school these days so that our children will be more competitive. Well, how can you be competitive when you don't know basic skills, folks? I mean, come on. You know, that's what we have colleges for. That's what higher education is for. Doing it in school, school is for you to learn basic reading, writing, arithmetic, and even advanced reading, writing, arithmetic. It's not for workforce development. That's what we have higher education for. But the school-to-work thing, all of this goes right back to the Communist Manifesto. Maybe it's time for us to review the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. So you folks understand, and I think a lot of you do understand, but I hope you spread this word to those who don't. In the early 1960s, this writer says, during the days of the former Soviet Union, and the former is in quotes, Russian Premier Nikita Khrushchev pounded his shoe on the podium of the United Nations and shouted to the West, "We will bury you." Fearing an invasion from the Reds, America proceeded to build the most awesome military machine in history. Unfortunately, we forgot to guard our political home front from being taken over by socialist, communist, liberal activities who would gain office and destroy American law by process of gradually installing the communist agenda within our own legal system and separate branches of government. The communist program from the start has been one which sees their revolution of 1917 successful only upon total domination of the world. Americans being the most naive people, and folks, I gotta say, this is too generous. We've been dumbed down. Americans, unfortunately, are just stupid. And I'm not trying to be denigrating, I'm not trying to be insulting, but folks, we don't know that the enemy is within the gates, and that's by design. But they say, Americans being the most naive people among the nations now believe that communism is dead because the Berlin Wall and the Iron Curtain have been removed. The ironic truth is that communism has just switched names to become more politically correct. Today it is called international democracy. The reason that the Berlin Wall came crashing down is not because communism is dead, but because they have achieved a planned agenda to communize the West, including America. Washington, D.C. has indeed become part of the new world order of atheist governments. With the last vestiges of Christian law now having been removed from American government over the last 20 years, there is no longer a threat of resistance against world communism. In reality, American government became part of the Iron Curtain. Thus, there was no more need for the likes of a Berlin Wall. Once again, in their foolishness, the American public has believed the lies of their leaders who applaud the fall of communism. Again, I say, a lie that began with the Reagan administration. While they have sold out the country to anti-Christian, anti-American statutes and regulations on the federal, state, and local levels. Posted below, which I will now read, is a comparison of the original 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx in 1848 along with the American adopted counterpart of each of the Democratic parties. Along with the counterpart of each of the planks, The American people have been truly buried in communism by their own politicians of both the Republicans and the Democratic parties. One other thing to remember, Karl Marx was stating in the Communist Manifesto that these planks will test whether a country has become communist or not. If they're all in effect and enforced, the country is communist. Communism, but by any other name, folks, is still communism. And some of these reference law, some of these reference various places, take notes and look these things up. Maybe I'll have to post this on the website. I'll have to do this after the, we should have this stuff up there anyway. So you can reference, we can look all this stuff up. Number one, we're talking about the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto now. Abolition of private property and the application of all rent to public purpose. Now the American counterpart, the American implementation, the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, 1868, and various zoning, school, and property taxes. We're going to talk a little bit about zoning if we have time tonight. Something interesting happened this past week. Also, we have the Bureau of Land Management, swallowing land all across this country. Implementation of Agenda 21. Number two, a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. Misapplication of the 16th Amendment, this is the American implementation of this, of the United States, 1913, the Social Security Act of 1936, Joint House Resolution 192 of 1933, and various state income taxes. We call it paying your fair share. How many times have you ever heard a politician say that? Okay? Well, that politician is a pro-communist, whether they call themselves that or not. Caring, you know, how many times have you heard the rich need to pay their fair share? They play these class envy games on you all the time. Okay? All of this fits right in with the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. Number three, abolition of all rights of inheritance. We call it federal and state estate tax, 1916. Or reform probate laws and limited inheritance via arbitrary inheritance tax statutes. Number four, confiscation of the property of all immigrants and rebels. We call it government seizures, tax liens, public law 99-570 of 1986, executive order 11490, sections 1205, I think that should be section 1205 of 2002, which gives private land to the Department of Urban Development. The imprisonment of terrorists, quote-unquote. Who's a terrorist, folks? Anybody that disagrees with the government. Oh, and that's why they want to take away your guns, by the way. And those who speak out or write against the government. In 1997 crime/terrorist bill. Or the IRS confiscation of property without due process. That's all fits into number four of the communist. The 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. Number five, centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. We call it the Federal Reserve System, which is a credit debt system nationally organized by the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, by the way, which is a private banking system. All local banks are members of the Fed system and are regulated by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. This private bank has an exclusive monopoly in money creation, which in reality has ended the need for revenue from taxes. So why do they tax? To fool you into thinking they need them. Number six, centralization of the means of communication and transportation in the hands of the state. We call it the Federal Communications Commission. And the Department of Transportation, mandated through the ICC Act of 1887, the Commissions Act of 1934, the Interstate Commerce Commission established in 1938, the Federal Aviation Administration, the Federal Communications Commission, and Executive Orders, okay, they mentioned the FCC twice, and Executive Orders 11490, 10999, as well as state-mandated driver's license and Department of Transportation regulations. There is also the postal monopoly, Amtrak, and Conrail. Number 7, extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, the bringing into cultivation of wastelands, and the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with the common plan. We call it corporate capacity, the Desert Entry Act, and the Department of Agriculture, as well as the Department of Commerce and Labor, Department of Interior, the Environmental Protection Agency, Bureau of Land Management again, Bureau of Reclamation, Bureau of Mines, the National Park Service, and the IRS control of business through corporate regulations. Number 8, equal liability of all to labor. Establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. We call it the Social Security Administration and the Department of Labor. The national debt and inflation caused by the communal banks has caused the need for a two-income family. Women in the workplace since the 1920s, the 19th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, assorted socialist unions, affirmative action, the Federal Public Works Program, and, of course, Executive Order 11,000. And this person says, oh, I almost forgot, the Equal Rights Amendment means that women should do all work that men do, including the military, and since its passage, it would make the women subject to the draft, which, by the way, it's on its way, folks. There's two bills currently pending in Congress. I'll cover that in just a moment. Number 9, combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries. Gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country by a more equitable distribution of the population over the country. We call it Planning Reorganization Act of 1949, zoning, as in Title 17, from 1910 to 1990, and super corporate farms, as well as Executive Order 11,647, 11,731, the 10 regions, regional governance, and Public Law 89-136. And finally, the 10th, and the 10 Planks of the Communist Manifesto, implemented here in the United States of America, the land of the free, at least that's what people think, free education. This is a big one. This is perhaps the most important, because this keeps people from rebelling. If they don't know their history, they're not going to be able to know where the gauge where you're at, folks. Free education for all children in government schools. Abolition of children's factory labor in its present form. Combination of education with industrial production, etc., etc. I don't even think this needs interpretation, but we'll do it anyway. People are being taxed to support what we call public schools, which train the young to work for the communal debt system. We also call it the Department of Education, the NEA, and outcomes-based education. And so I ask you, does changing the words change the end result? By using different words, is it all of a sudden okay? We are so smart, aren't we? None are more hopelessly enslaved as those who falsely believe they're free. And Americans sing patriotic songs. Americans I remember back in school we said the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. I don't even think they do that anymore. I don't know, do they? Folks, Americans don't realize that the country has been infiltrated with communists, and this country is in fact controlled by communists. And we talk about this so much on this broadcast because it's of utmost importance that everyone understand where we are here. And we still have a voice to speak for now. We still have a voice to talk. But just because you don't have tanks in your streets, just because you don't have, the police tactics are getting more and more aggressive all the time. Yet people still believe they have rights. And since September 11th, you're having less and less say in what goes on. You're seeing more and more of the true nature of communism operating within our government. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. What do you think about all this, folks? Give me a call, 1-800-858-6582, rather than listen to me ramble on for 2 hours straight. Let's hear your input. 1-800-858-6582. I told you I'd talk a little bit about the draft tonight. I think it's important because we're having a situation here in this country where our military, of course, is spread around the world, anywhere from 120 to 141 countries. Who knows exactly the number? It depends on the source who's given the information. But here we see an article in the New York Times that says soldiers could face extended duty tours. The Army announced Wednesday that it would require all soldiers bound for Iraq and Afghanistan to extend their active duty at least until their units have returned home, a move that could keep thousands of troops in service longer than they expected over the next several years. The announcement, which expands an existing program that applies to some soldiers already in Iraq or Afghanistan, means that soldiers who had planned to retire, move to other Army jobs, or leave the military when their enlistments expired will be required to stay for the length of their unit's deployment in the two combat zones. That could range from a few extra weeks to more than a year. Commanders will be allowed to make exceptions in special circumstances. The move will affect active duty and reserve units that are within 90 days of deploying to Iraq and Afghanistan, which are now typically one-year assignments, and will last up to 90 days after the unit returns home, Army officials said. The officials did not give us a precise time frame for how long the policy would remain in force or exactly how many troops it would affect, saying it depended on the pace of the ambitious Army reorganization and how operations went in Iraq and Afghanistan. The impact of in southern Arizona, well, I don't know why they're referring to southern. The impact of southern Arizona was unclear Wednesday. An official at the Fort Huachuca Army Post, I know I butchered that, in Sierra Vista said it could take several days to determine how many soldiers there might be affected. The order affects soldiers who were scheduled to complete their Army enlistments heading into retirement or waiting transfers to other units. The point being, folks, that the military is overstretched. I think we've made that point in the past. There's a number of the bottom line is they're too heavily, as Foreign Affairs has said, writers, insiders in Foreign Affairs have written, the military is too heavily reliant right now upon reservists. And as a result of that, they have to bring back the draft. And now they are. And they keep saying over and over again that these bills that are pending in Congress, and there's one in the House and one in the Senate, twin bills, S-89 in the Senate and H.R. 163 in the House. These are bills that would bring back the draft starting in June 2005. And they keep saying over and over again that it's not likely that they're going to pass. And I say it's unlikely that they won't. I'm really hoping, by the way, that they don't pass. Of course, aside because I got a vested interest in their not passing. I have two daughters, and these bills would also draft women. In fact, let me just read this article here. This is something from Congress.org, Capital Advantage, I guess is the name of the group. They said, pending draft legislation targeted for spring 2005. The draft will start in June 2005. There is pending legislation in the House and Senate, twin bills S-89 and H.R. 163, which will time the program's initiation so the draft can begin as early as spring 2005, just after the 2004 presidential election. The administration is quietly trying to get these bills passed now, while the public's attention is on the elections. So our action on this is needed immediately. $28 million has been added to the 2004 Selective Service System budget to prepare for a military draft that could start as early as June 15, 2005. Selective Service must report to Bush on March 31, 2005 that the system, which has lain dormant for decades, is ready for activation. They refer to a web address, which I'm not going to bother to deal with right now. The Pentagon has quietly begun a public campaign to fill all 10,350 draft board positions and 11,070 appeals board slots nationwide. Though this is an unpopular election year topic, military experts and influential members of Congress are suggesting that if Rumsfeld's prediction, listen to this, folks, if Rumsfeld's prediction of a long, hard slog in Iraq and Afghanistan and a permanent state of war on terrorism proves accurate, the U.S. may have no choice but to draft. Congress brought twin bills S-89 and H.R. 163 forward this year, entitled the Universal National Service Act of 2003, quote, to provide for the common defense by requiring that all young persons, ladies and gentlemen, ages 18 to 26 in the United States, including women, perform a period of military service or a period of civilian service in furtherance of the national defense and homeland security. They're drafting your children. All young people will be drafted for homeland security purposes. What are they going to tell those children once they get them in there, I ask? You know, this is a militarization of America's youth, folks. This is more than just a military draft. It's the militarization of the young people. And, of course, they put the words, and for other purposes. These active bills currently sit in the Committee on Armed Services. Dodging the draft will be more difficult than those from the Vietnam era. College and Canada will not be options. In December 2001, Canada and the U.S. signed a smart border declaration, which could be used to keep would-be draft dodgers in. Signed by Canada's Minister of Foreign Affairs, John Manley, and U.S. Homeland Security Director Tom Ridge, the declaration involves a 30-point plan which implements, among other things, a pre-clearance agreement of people entering and departing each country. Reforms aimed at making the draft more equitable along gender and class lines also eliminates higher education as a shelter. Underclassmen would only be able to postpone service until the end of their current semester. Seniors would have until the end of the academic year. Even those voters who currently support U.S. actions abroad may still object to this move, knowing their own children or grandchildren will not have a say about whether to fight. Not that it should make a difference, but this plan, among other things, eliminates higher education as a shelter and includes women in the draft. Well, they've pretty much already said that. The public has a right to air their opinions about such an important decision. And they said, please send this on to friends, parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents, and cousins that you know. Let your children know, too, it's their future, and they can be a powerful voice for change. Contact your representatives and ask them why they aren't telling their constituents about these bills, and contact newspapers and other media outlets to ask them why they're not covering this important story. Folks, they're coming after your children. The war on terror, if it hasn't already hit home for you, it's hitting home now. It's incumbent upon all of us to get involved and to do what they say here and write letters to the editor, whatever we have to do. We'll be back here on American Exposé. I'm Darren Week, sitting in for Chris Kerner. Stay tuned.